Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Our program is devoted, as you know, to the fastest growing segment of our society. To some who don't even know they're part of that segment at this point, but certainly will grow into an awareness of it over time. It's for those of you like me who know that there's something dreadfully wrong, even destructive, about religion, politics, media reporting, military adventurism, and economic schemes. We have finally come to realize that the institutions we once supported are not the solution. They are the problem. So instead of merely presenting the news or rooting for one side over another, as is typical in talk radio, our mission is to understand what is causing all of the calamities, the tragedies that are besieging our planet. Well, predicting how these events are going to influence our world if we don't stand up to them. And that is why in our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms, through evidence and reason. We're going to kindly ask you to check your beliefs at the door, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides hope, the only reliable response to an exceedingly troubled world. We have come to realize that words, not bullets and bombs, wisely wielded, provide the answer for everything that ails us, from economic ruin to terrorism, from religious myths to political hypocrisy. Our phone number, if you would like to participate in this discussion of a lifetime, is 877-300-7645. I want to begin this morning's news by talking about an isolated incident. Excuse me again today. I'm playing wounded under pain medication for an ailing back. But there is an incident in Oklahoma City that is far worse than a sore back. An Australian man who was attending a Oklahoma college on a baseball scholarship, he was shot and killed. Now, there's a lot of people that are shot and killed every day in America. What makes this one so tragic is that it was a random act of violence by three bored teenagers. Three teenagers, ages 15, 16, and 17. Just got bored one afternoon and said, you know, what we ought to do for fun, let's go kill somebody. They saw this man walking across the street. He got into his car. They walked up to the side door of that car, and they shot him. Now, I'm going to say something that I know does not sit well with those who are younger than I am, who grew up in a different culture, especially for boys and young men. But there's a consequence of playing first-person shooter games. There's a consequence of spending an inordinate amount of time in a make-believe world where killing is the objective. Strategy, of course, is involved, and there are some games I think that, from what I've seen, are highly constructive. Civilization might be one of them. But the popularity of first-person shooter games has created this mythology that killing is fun, that killing is entertaining, that there's nothing wrong with killing. You can do it in these games all day long. You just hit the reset button, and there you go again. These boys were bored. They're computer game players. Let's go off and kill somebody. And they did. It is a genuine concern. You know, where you spend your time has an enormous influence on who you become. If you spend your time studying the Torah, getting to know Yahweh, his father, participating in his family, you're going to be a very different person than someone who chooses to spend 4 hours a day playing first-person shooter games on video consoles. Again, I understand there's lots of people, the vast majority of people, who are able to isolate that. And, you know, I might in my free time want to watch a sporting event. Others may want to do play sports. You know, when I was younger, I liked to play sports. There's lots of things that we can do that are activities that take us kind of away from the real world, from our responsibilities as members of families and for making a living. I'm just suggesting that for many, video games may be a poor choice.
Well, I think part of the problem with that is that you got to, it comes down to parents. As somebody that plays a lot of video games or played a lot of video games, my parents made sure that I didn't spend all my time doing that. And then on top of that, they made sure that I understood that those weren't real.
Yeah. And I put a caveat here, two caveats. One is I know that we're going to disagree somewhat on this, which is just fine. I mean, it's appropriate that we disagree on minor issues like this. Otherwise, you know, what fun would life be if we all had the same opinion of everything, right? But the other caveat was there are obviously those through good parenting, through good character, through developing other interests in things that are more important, like Scott, who are able to choose that as an avenue of entertainment and use it just for the strategy applications and enjoy the strategy involved and can go on with their lives and would never say, I'm bored, let's go off and shoot someone. But I don't know if it's a meaningful minority of those who are totally wrapped up in the thrill and the kind of the ultra world of video games, or if it's a majority, but a slim majority, but it's somewhere between a significant minority and a slim majority of young people who are playing these games, who by the combination of bad parenting, of bad education in terms of indoctrination and political correctness, so they're no longer able to exercise good judgment, and the spending way too much time playing video games and probably too much time around mind-altering drugs and the like, are going to make a lot of bad choices. I think it's going to influence our world going forward more than we think.
I agree with what you're saying. I think part of that comes into also where drones. I mean, we use drones. Mm-hmm. It's just basically a video game.
Correct. We talked about that in the program in the past.
We talked about this in the program.
It is a direct transition from playing first-person shooter games and thinking that's entertaining to go flying drones where the purpose is to kill those that the President of the United States decides that he doesn't think have a right to live. Okay. I mean, it's a really, really, really small, thin line between those two things. And this mentality of remote control killing from a video screen and playing video games, I want to tell you, it is all part of a culture that is putting us closer and closer to national chaos.
And I can't disagree with anything you're saying. In fact, I agree with it. You got to be able to use your conscience in order to, like, say, you have to know what you're doing.
So if the purpose of academia today, if the primary purpose of academia today is to discourage people from using their conscience because political correctness demands that we not be judgmental, that we be tolerant of all things, which means that you can no longer be discriminating. If that's the purpose of academia, and then the most popular form of entertainment is video games, and the most popular form of video games are first-person shooters, what does that say for the eventual influence and outcome?
It doesn't speak anything good. It means
no.
You can expect more of this.
No. So I think it is a very significant problem. Now, both of my sons play video games a lot less now because they're engaged in, you know, in jobs and work and one is now married, and so life goes on, and there's very little time for the old form of entertainment, and it most certainly did not influence them in a negative way. So Scott's example is viable. I don't want to be judgmental of people who have a conscience, who do it as a form of entertainment and don't wrap themselves up in it. But I want to tell you, as a sign of the times, it is something that is going to contribute to our demise and to a mindset that when chaos does envelop us because of our impending economic doom, this is going to be a real problem. It is going to exacerbate what is already a death spiral for this country.
I think there's another side of this, though, that kind of gets people to play the games. There's Major League Gaming, MLG. You can actually make quite a bit of money playing these. If you're good at these first-person shooters, you can make a lot of money playing them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that, you know, might get them into it. But it comes down to parenting. If you are paying attention to what your kids are doing, you're going to explain to them, you can't do this.
Yeah. Here's the problem that I see is that in the military now, much of the training is done on video games. You know, they have if you want to play tank, they have video games for tank flying. If you want to fly airplanes, they have video games for flying airplanes. You know, they actually now do game simulations for training in the military, and a disproportionate number of the young men that sign up for the military particularly love the war-based first-person shooter games. And so this distinction between what's real and what's imaginary becomes a really fine line.
Well, the government created their own first-person shooter.
Of course they did.
America's Army. They created their own first-person shooter to try and get people into that.
Yeah, one of the reasons they wanted to do it was that we found in World War II that the majority of people that you give a gun and you have a target, you've got somebody wearing a uniform on the other side that is your enemy, and you you have them in your sights, the majority of Americans wouldn't pull the trigger because they knew that there was just something wrong with killing the other individual.
Or they'd shoot high.
They'd shoot high to say, you know, I tried, I just missed.
Yeah.
And so the government, in the transition between World War II, they didn't have enough time to Korea, but then to Vietnam, they created a conditioning mechanism in their curriculum for boot camp and also in West Point and other the Naval Academy to make killing a righteous deed, to dehumanize the enemy. You see this in that in the video that was released by Bradley Manning, where he shows the American helicopter is shooting the civilians in Afghanistan. They were enjoying it. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Excuse me for the distraction there. I had an opportunity to play dad over the commercial break. Always challenges, even with adult sons. We mentioned sons during the first segment. And I am always honored, even excited, when either of my boys, both are young men at this point, have challenges in their life, and they still find it valuable to call dad and ask for advice. So that is the one of the favorite things that one can do. As a matter of fact, one of the great ways to remove oneself from being preoccupied by anything that isn't particularly productive is to have kids, you know, get married and have kids. And all of a sudden you find that there's just this enormous opportunity to enjoy contributing to your family. There's a more bad news out of Egypt. This story is brought to us by Reuters. I read it this morning and I was just perplexed by how unaware journalists are today. It reads as follows. Stunned by turmoil in neighboring Egypt and starved of funds, the Palestinian Islamic group Hamas is looking to repair damaged ties with its traditional Middle East allies, Iran, and the Lebanese Hezbollah party. You know, there are so many, this is Reuters, there are so many mistakes in that opening statement. You just wonder, whoa. Well, how is it that Americans or anyone in the free world, Reuters is an international source, so anyone speaking English is the primary Reuters, I would guess, disposition of their news. Why? How is anyone going to be able to make an intelligent decision if the information they're given is so polluted? Now, first, no one is stunned by what happened in Egypt. The Islamic world has gone between military dictatorships and pretend democracies where they like Kuwait, they have elections. It's just that it doesn't matter who you vote for. They go back and forth between these things all the time. It's not stunning that Egypt had a one person one vote election, and that the most fundamentalist Islamist won 65% to 70% of the seats, and we're in the process of turning that country over to Sharia, a theocracy, and that the military responded with a military coup. It's the norm. So no one is stunned. No one that's at least aware of what happens in the Islamic world is stunned. Now, the fact that they're starved for funds, why would the terrorist group Hamas be starved for funds? Might it be that in the Islamic world, unless you have the black ooze coming from beneath your feet, and you can be part of OPEC and use that monopoly to rape the world economically, that there is nothing going on? That if you were to take the 55 Islamic countries, they are the 55 most impoverished countries on earth. So what's the common denominator that makes all of these Islamic countries impoverished? All right, Islam. So that's why they're starved for funds. If it wasn't for America, for example, propping up Egypt, and other OPECers now propping up Egypt on both sides, depending on if they prefer the Islamic Brotherhood, the Muslim Brotherhood, or the military junta. But if it wasn't for that, if it wasn't for what we do in Pakistan, for example, wasn't for the fact that we're just plowing money into Afghanistan, they'd collapse. That's why they're starved for funds. Now, there is no such thing as a Palestinian. There has never been a Palestinian. There will never be a Palestinian. And that lie is right at the crux of what's going to cause World War III. And so this is not just, we're going to play semantics here. There has never been a Palestinian. There will never be a place called Palestine. If you don't understand why this myth was perpetrated, why this lie was perpetrated, then World War III is going to come as a hell of a surprise. That's going to be the shocking thing, is World War III and why it happened, if you don't know why Palestinian is a myth. It's also curious that we use Islamist group as opposed to, say, Islamic terrorist group. You know, Islamic is the term for that which is influenced by the Islamic religion. But now we say Islamist as is somehow different than Islam. We'll return with these errors when Shattering Myths continues after the break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This isn't just a great example as to why we have to recognize that the news media is part of the problem, not part of the solution. They wrote this paragraph. This is from Reuters. Stunned by the turmoil in neighboring Egypt and starved of funds, the Palestinian Islamist group Hamas is looking to repair damaged ties with its traditional Middle East allies, Iran, and the Lebanese Hezbollah party. Almost everything they said there is untrue. No one is stunned that understands what the history of Islam. Islam has always leaned towards militaristic rule. It is a dominion where fascism has been the order of the day for now, but 1,400 years. So when you see history repeat itself, the only people who are stunned would be those who are completely ignorant of history. They're starved for funds for the same reason that Egypt is starved for funds. Egypt now is receiving tens of billions of dollars, one side or the other, from Qatar is funding the Muslim Brotherhood. Saudi Arabia is funding the military. And the reason is because without a moral code that is akin to Yahweh's 10 statements that he etched in stone, without a moral code that is based upon treating people fairly, as he establishes in his Torah, there is no opportunity for economic progress because people will not risk their capital and will not devote the toil to anything when they recognize that there is no likelihood of a benefit. If the benefit occurs, it's stolen from them in an Islamic country. It's confiscated. So that's why they're starved for funds. You know, I have been in Islamic countries, particularly as you go across and you see the prosperity of Israel, and you just go across the fenced area into what now is a Palestinian, a PA-controlled area, and you just go from everyone working and prosperity to no one working. And it's the only shift is in religion. Palestinian is a complete misnomer. There is no Palestinian. There never has been a Palestinian. There never will be a Palestinian. The closest thing to a Palestinian is Philistine, and the Philistines cease to exist well over 2,500 years ago. And so to refer to a group of people who are just Arab Muslims by a name of an extinct people that is were wiped out 2,500 years ago is nothing but a ploy. And when it is deployed ubiquitously, then you know that that ploy is at the heart of a conspiracy. And what is the conspiracy designed to do? To take Israel from Yehudim, from the Israelites. Hamas is a terrorist group, but Hamas, like all terrorist groups, has multiple sides. They not only exist to lob rockets into Israel and to commit acts of terrorism, but they also exist to as clerics for the purpose of indoctrinating everyone on the traditional nature of the Islamic religion, which is a declaration of war against all humankind. And it also has a charity wing that is that will provide food and housing and the like, education, if you will, to those who sign a pledge to support Hamas. The interesting next aspect of this is that they're trying to repair ties with traditional Middle East allies, Iran and the Lebanese Hezbollah party. The traditional allies of Hamas is the Muslim Brotherhood. They were conceived, as was the PLO, as was Fatah, as were most of the best-known Islamic terrorist organizations, including Al-Qaeda, out of the Muslim Brotherhood. Sayyid Qutb is the founder of modern Islamic terrorist groups. He wrote on behalf of the Muslim Brotherhood. His two books, Signposts Along the Way and In the Shade of the Quran, read very similar to Prophet of Doom. He basically took the hadith and the Quran and placed them into the context of Muhammad's life, and therefore he wrote that based upon Muhammad's words and deeds and what the Quran says, you are compelled as a Muslim to be a terrorist. Now, that's what I say in Prophet of Doom. The only difference between Qutb's Signposts Along the Way and In the Shade of the Quran and Prophet of Doom is that I respond to that and say, that's wrong. You ought not be beguiled by a religion that commands Muslims to be terrorists. And Qutb says, well, that's he was our spokesperson for God, therefore what he said and did must be good, or I say it's bad. And so when you recognize that their traditional allies are Sunni Muslims and the Muslim Brotherhood, it's the antithesis of their traditional Middle East allies being Iran. No, the opposite of that. Iran is the source of Shia influence, not Sunni influence. The Muslim Brotherhood is the dominant influence in the Sunni Islamic world, not the Shia world. So what they've said here is the opposite of what's true. And it's we're not dealing with Middle East allies. We're dealing with Muslim allies. Middle East is just simply geography. The Middle East has nothing to do with what's going on here. The fact that, these countries stretch all the way from Western Africa all the way through Malaysia does not have anything to do with geography. This is a religious problem. They couldn't say Muslim allies, I guess, without losing their politically correct card. Now, they do say that they're trying to reach out to Iran, and then they call Hezbollah the Lebanese Hezbollah party. Hezbollah is only Lebanese in the sense that the Iranians, after America gave Iraq to Iran, were able to not only control Syria, but also Lebanon by way of Hezbollah. But Hezbollah, it'd be like when the United States Marines were stationed in Lebanon to call them the Lebanese Marines. No, they're still United States Marines. They just happen to be stationed in Lebanon. But the same thing is true with Hezbollah. Hezbollah is not a Lebanese terrorist group. They are a Iranian terrorist group based upon Shia Islam. Now, so if you get all of that wrong in your opening sentence, what hope is there to have the proper perspective to understand anything that's occurring? If you don't understand it, then these events are going to stun you. The future is going to be stunning. Now, for those who actually understand who the players are and what they're doing and how all of this fits into the prophetic timeline that Yahweh has given us, we know exactly what's going to happen. We know who is doing what to whom, when it's going to boil over, and what the consequence is going to be. Now, that doesn't mean just because we know that Team Islam is going to attack Israel in unison in 2027 as a result of a peace treaty being ratified and reaffirmed with Israel, surrendering land for promises that won't be upheld in 2026, that just because we know that's going to happen and that we know the consequence of that is going to be the deaths of billions of people, a minimum of 3.5 billion and probably more as a result of our tolerance of Islam and partnering with it and arming and weaponizing Islam. So just because we know that's what's going to happen, and just because the headlines and the world events make it obvious that's going to occur, doesn't mean that we shouldn't speak out against it and warn people, anyone who is open and willing to listen, that, you know, don't let yourself be caught up in it. Don't support your government when your government is aiding and abetting its own destruction, the destruction of its own people. Well, this particular article continues to say, an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas. Well, that's true. They are an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas celebrated when the Sunni movement's Mohammed Morsi was elected president in Egypt in 2012. You know, the fact that Morsi was a Sunni Muslim was irrelevant to his election in the sense of it's like saying that in America, a Democrat or a Republican will be elected president the next time around. They're going to get, you know, 95% of the votes. In Egypt, it's something like in the range of 90% of Muslims in Egypt are Sunnis. That's the reason why the representative of the Muslim Brotherhood is going to be a Sunni. Anyway, they were celebrating that and that, and how that would boost Hamas's international standing, and it and what this calls the isolated Gaza Strip. Now, the Gaza Strip is not isolated. The Gaza Strip shares a large, long border with Egypt. It's not the least bit isolated from Egypt. Never has been isolated from Egypt. The only reason that it's presented as being isolated is to create this picture of these poor little people that are being oppressed by Jews on living in occupied lands. Hamas, I mean, the Gaza Strip now is no longer even occupied by Jews. They pulled out. They said, okay, you want this hellhole, you have it. We won't try to keep it civil. So now their only contact is with Egypt. And when the Muslim Brotherhood took power, the first thing they did is bonded with Hamas and opened the border to weapons into Gaza through the Sinai. They expanded what was Gaza now, and it's in the Gaza now, the mentality of Gaza, the weaponizing of Gaza, the rage of Gaza now permeates the entire Sinai. And so it's become an incorporated area as opposed to an isolated area. And the military coup has done nothing to change that. And when the military tried to do so, they just had, 25 or 26 of their soldiers killed in the northern Sinai for this specific reason. And so when we present Gaza as isolated, when in fact it's being unified not only with Egypt, but with all of the terrorist activity taking place on the Sinai, we again lose the perspective that is necessary to understand what is occurring. Now we'll return to this story because there's much to learn when Shattering Myths continues after this commercial break. As we continue with this story from Reuters about the impoverished state of affairs for Hamas and them having to rebuild their strained relationship with Iran, which blossomed after the United States invaded Iraq, we find that Reuters is actually saying something that is accurate, something that we reported on this program. It reads, in the meantime, outraged by the civil war in Syria, the Palestinian, they're not a Palestinian group, the Hamas is just a group of mostly Egyptian, but Arab Muslims, Sunni Muslims, group quit its headquarters in Damascus, snapping the Iran-led axis of resistance that challenged Israel and the West across the turbulent region. So when the United States invaded Iraq, it gave Iraq to Iran. Iran grew an influence over Syria. At the time, Hamas had their headquarters in Syria because that way it was more difficult for the Israelis to hold the leaders of Hamas accountable when they ordered acts of terrorism or shot rockets into Israel. Syria went from having an allegiance with a secular country, a secular dictator in Saddam Hussein in Iraq, to being influenced then and controlled by the Shia terrorists and the Shiite imams of Iran. They then influenced Syria. And the idea for Iran, whose great call in life is to destroy Israel, was then they had this crescent of land bridge from Iran all the way down into Israel. But when the Syrian civil war began and you had Sunnis fighting Shias because Hamas is a Shia organization, their hatred for Israel, which is what they shared with Iran, was less important than their brotherhood with Sunni Muslims over Shia Muslims, and they thumbed their nose at Iran and said, we can't side with Iran anymore since Iran is aiding and abetting the killing of Sunni Muslims. So now that they're broke, they're saying, well, you know, we both hate Israel. We both want to wipe Israel off the map. You know, we both chant death to Israel. That's our slogan. So why don't we go back to emphasizing the fact that we both want to destroy Israel, and let's forget about the fact that we're Sunnis and you're Shias. And that's basically what has happened. So this article got at least that part of the story right. The Shiite Muslim Iran, which had for years supplied Hamas with cash and arms. Now, Iran had only supplied Hamas with cash and arms during this brief period where America unstabilized the Islamic world, taking the Shia Islam, which represents about 10% of Muslims, and empowering them so that they became the driving force by giving them Iraq, which in turn gave them Syria, which in turn gave them Lebanon, which in turn gave them control over Hamas. And so they had Israel exactly where they wanted Israel, but their influence bothered the Sunni fiefdoms like Saudi Arabia, and that's what created this civil war now in Syria. And so now we're in a position where they're trying to decide, do we want to forget about the fact that Hamas betrayed Iran, or that Iran betrayed Hamas by their positions in the Syrian civil war, when in fact Hamas now is desperate for both money and for weapons. You know, there's been a while since Hamas has shot rockets into Israel. The rockets now they're landing in Israel coming from the Sinai. But they don't feel like they're vital. They're not in the news. They're not important unless there's a conflict and they need more weapons. It's very much like the trial of George Zimmerman, how the African-American leaders, if you want to call them that, actually knew that there was no chance that George Zimmerman was going to be convicted. But they set up that whole thing as this false charade, as when the not guilty verdicts were read, that somehow the African community had been shortchanged in all of this, all for the specific purpose of making themselves important again, putting themselves back in the limelight. Well, that's what Hamas wants. They want their fix of weapons so that they're back in the limelight attacking Israel. And so they've gone to their enemy, the Shias, and saying, oh, let's forget. Let's make has-beens, and could you please supply us with money and weapons again so we can kill Jews?